solve the poem and the riddle. Very impressive making it this far. And now you're here for the clue.
Coming up, Discovery's Dr. Culber bravely embraces an alien consciousness as an 800-year-old Trill symbiote guides he, Booker, and Captain Burnham towards the mysterious and powerful progenitor life-creating technology.
Janal!
I see you survived.
You knew that was their nesting ground, didn't you? And you had us draw our phasers to incite them. Why?
But can we trust the motives of this ancient symbiote, or is the Discovery crew being led into a potentially devastating trap?
All this and more
coming up on the Star Trek Discovery edition of Energize.
Energize, energize.
We're going into the uncharted regions of the Star Trek universe 1,000 years after James T. Kirk.
You're listening to Energize, a Star Trek Discovery Edition podcast, your source for detailed analysis, colorful debate, and spirited discussions about the final adventures of Captain Michael Burnham and the USS Discovery crew.
I'm your host, Anthony McLemore.
And I'm Steve Truitt. This week, an 800-year-old symbiote takes on the role of gatekeeper to the clue about the progenitor technology.
Meanwhile, Burnham's newly appointed first officer reluctantly adjusts to his new crew and his recent demotion.
Here's a warp speed recap of Season 5, Episode 3 of Star Trek Discovery, Janal.
Request permission to transport to Trill.
Sorry, Captain. They're denying your request to beam down.
We are here for the clue. We understand you have it?
I cannot help you. Only Janal can. He requires that you speak with him directly.
How are we supposed to do this?
A Shantara.
It's a ritual that allows Janal's consciousness to transfer to another body for a limited time.
Captain, Janal can use me.
The transference is complete.
We solved the poem and the riddle, and now you're here for the clue.
Yes.
800 years ago, Federation President brought together 6 scientists in secret. Don't ask me their names, I won't tell you. Oh, take cover!
Well, the hits just keep on coming.
The ones agitated, they don't back down. We have to go now.
No, we can't. We need the clue.
Well, you're not getting it tonight.
What? There has to be a way.
There's no way. We stay, we die.
Okay, so, Steve, this week we continue our journey of finding clues to the progenitor technology, and, this is turning out to be an adventure. What are your thoughts on that?
I like this. You know, I've been thinking about this a lot since episode 2, and then this episode. I had said in the beginning I wasn't a huge fan of Discovery. I didn't like what they were going with the stories. What they're doing here is a very smart thing. They're taking pieces of canon and they're injecting it into the 8,000 or the year 3,000, and they're doing the right thing. This is what Lower Decks does so brilliantly. They take everything that we know and they put it into this really bite-sized fun thing, and now what Discovery is doing is taking this old Picard story and revitalizing it, and I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it was a very smart move. And I think what's really cool about this, the sense of adventure and discovery, no pun intended, it has been reinfused to what, the show, I think, was, at its best at season 2. And it's a story that we can wrap our heads around.
I agree, and I think that this is maybe what they wanted in the beginning, and I don't know why they lost their way. I know they had to go into the future because they couldn't explain Discovery because it wasn't in canon until now. How do you do a prequel that's never mentioned? So they did what they had to do. But the last 2 seasons, they just really, really missed the mark. And I think to go out on this 5th season, doing it with canon, with this good story, they're doing great.
We need to know what we're getting into before we get to Trill. What have you learned about Locke?
Sorry, Captain. Still nothing on Locke.
What about Maul?
She's been through a lot.
And always comes out on top. But if we run into them in Trill, won't be pretty.
So we start off at Starfleet headquarters and Discovery's in preps to head to the Trill homeward to find the next clue to the progenitor tech. And Burnham is debriefing with Dr. Culber and Booker regarding Locke and Maul.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of this has to do with, we discovered, you know, last episode that Booker had this connection to Maul. He's kind of talking about her a little bit and the kind of life that she had. And I know that the doctor was like, you know, I know I don't understand what her life is, but you do. And he's serving a really good point here to be a bit of a sounding board. I like what he's doing.
Yeah. And so because of that connection, he insists on going on this mission. And Burnham is still reluctant to having Book around, and I think rightfully so, considering what he did in the previous season.
Right, and that's another thing I love that they're bringing over. They're not just letting him forget about it. They're not forgetting about it. It's a cross that he bears, or an albatross that he has to carry. I like that part of the history. I'm glad they brought that over.
And he should, for what he did. Yeah. He almost got Earth destroyed. Yeah. So, even though we understand that he lost his planet and it clouded his judgment. So, a pass but not a pass. He still has to carry that cross, like you said.
And it's good that he's going to. I always think that he's a good addition. He adds a bit. What am I looking for here? He adds another dimension to the adventure that I really appreciate. He's kind of a tough guy. I like that.
All right. What do we got?
We've been analyzing the poem from Lyric, and
we used a decryption algorithm to try and find any coded messages in the language syntax. Nothing there, but we did find this on the metal piece you recovered.
So Burnham meets with Tilly and Adira and gets an update regarding the artifact. And so they discover a pattern on that artifact resembling Trill facial spots. And, it's basically like a human fingerprint.
Yeah, and I didn't realize that about Trill before. I didn't, like I said, I never watched a lot of Deep Space Nine, so I never really got into the Trill thing or understood it. But just to know that and that the spots are all different, I'm fascinated by that symbiont human relationship where it goes from body to body and lives within these humans. And, you know, when one dies, they jump to the next or however that works, and that you can live all these years. I found that really, really interesting. And the pattern itself belonged to this guy who coincidentally lived 800 years ago when who was alive? Picard.
All right, yeah, Picard. I'm sorry. My mind jumped for a second. I was like, Jesse Dax? Oh, no.
Yes, her too.
Yeah.
Or him too. I don't know what they're.
Yeah.
Them too.
Them too. Yeah, that's a better way of explaining it. But I've always been fascinated by the fact that you have this collective memory that's embodied in the symbiont that, you know, transfers all the memories and to an effect, I guess, the personalities. But then you have the host who is really the guiding personality. It's weird.
Right. Yeah, that is strange. And you know, to become this symbiont, this they, you have to really give up your life in a way. It's a really interesting
thing.
Yeah,
and it's only a certain, like 10% of the population even does it. You have to go through this this selection process to even be chosen to do it, and it's considered a high honor.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So I immediately jumped to an assumption. I was like, well, clearly this means that, you know, the host has to still be alive. Not the host, but right. The actual symbiont. And that's, you know, what we're going to have to go see on Trill.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like, where is he? The host body possibly can't be alive unless it's non-human and they do live a long time. But these Trills live, I think, a tremendously long time. And so whatever form that person's going to be in, we're going to find out.
Yep. And so finally, Burnham allows Booker to join them on the away mission and they reach Trill.
So, you know, on the way, Burnham wants to acclimate the new commander, Rayner, and literally rein him in and get him to know his people.
I need a rather fast.
I'd like you to connect with them in person.
There are better ways to use me.
The culture on Discovery is inclusion, and everybody's friends, and you know, everybody's got each other's back, and the hierarchy isn't as important as the inclusion part, and that's just not Rayner's style. But Burnham wants him to get to know these people, and he's just like, all right, fine, and he's all grumpy about it.
Yeah, I mean, in the previous episode, he did, you know, state what his command style is, and it's just basically, yeah. I'm not playing patty cake with my crew. You know, there's a separation between the hierarchy and the people that they command.
And I think more to the point, he said, I'm not a yes man. I didn't take that to mean that he would never get to know his crew, but we find out here how far he goes with that.
Yeah, and I'm still shaky on him because I don't, you know, I find it very hard to believe that a person who commanded his own ship, has been out on the frontier, who's been on the forefront of many, many fights and battles, now has to take orders and serve as, you know, a second in command. That's got to be a tough gig.
But here's the thing. He didn't have to take it. He didn't have to accept the position. And I'm thinking there's, as I've said before, there's something up with this guy. It's one of two things. Either he's like a Captain Shaw character from Picard, where he's got a really tough past and it has to do with something, right? And he's bitter and he'll end up dying at the end, which is very likely. Or he's a spy. There's something going on. He's working for somebody.
You're sticking with that story. You really think this dude's a spy?
I'm sticking to it, man.
He's friends with the Admiral. Something's up. Come on now.
That doesn't mean anything. Half the admirals in the first episode of TNG were eating worms. You know this.
Yeah. You got a point there. But
I'm telling you, man, there's something up.
Well, yeah, there's something up. I'll agree with you on that point.
I picked one or the other. I said he's either got a past that has to do with Discovery or something, or he's a spy.
Yeah.
I'm going with spy.
But, you know, he's gruff, and he's not really interested in meeting with everybody, but Burnham says this is the point, you know, that, you know, considering the stunt he pulled on that mission, that he's got to earn the trust of the crew.
Right, and he, of course, reluctantly says he'll do that, too. I want to stop for a second and talk about his ears. I know he's not human, but I think it's a little lame just to have his crazy ears. I mean, they did that with the Vulcans and the Romulans. I'd like to see more of a difference than just he's got these two-way, throwing star ears or whatever they are. Right?
Yeah, he looks like the Aquamarina or one of
the... Yes, the Submariner. That's it.
Submariner, thank you, thank you.
He does look like Submariner.
Yep.
And it's a testament to the times that a lot of these guys are wearing beards, too. You know what I mean?
Yep, there you go.
You know, it's like post COVID. Everyone's got a beard now.
Yep.
Okay. Let's move on.
Lieutenant Christopher, request permission to transport to Trill.
I'm sorry, Captain. They're denying your request to beam down.
For what reason?
What they wouldn't say. Guardian Z would like to speak with you.
Put him through.
So they get to the planet Trill, or rather the Trill homeworld, and they're denied permission to beam down, which kind of threw me. Right off the bat.
What was that about? Because they had to answer some question. The guy's like, to me, it was poor writing because he's like, you cannot pass. You must answer a question. And they're like, oh, I know what the question is. He's like, okay, great. Go ahead. Like, it was just a little too easy. It was like one question.
But it seems like there have been some preparations for this day, I guess, over many centuries, I suppose.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm just like, like you, I was sitting there, is this a trick? Has the Trill been compromised? Is this due to hostage? Have Lol and Mok got there first?
Yeah, right.
So like, I wasn't sure where to go with that.
Yeah, like, oh, hey, Guardian, blink twice if you're being kidnapped, right? You know, but he asks, where does the fourth point? Now, obviously, this has to do with the mission that they're on and the scavenger hunt that they're doing. And it's interesting that the Guardians understand this. They know why they're there. But it really did seem like it was almost too easy for them to come to it. Yeah? No? Maybe?
I mean, I was a little dissatisfied by that. So I was just like, okay, all right, well, can't win them all.
They were talking about Beta Zed and all of this stuff, right?
Yeah.
That they'll go there next. By the way, I have a prediction. when they get to Beta Z, there's going to be some Troy something going on there. Like let's go to the Troy Museum, or here's the Deanna Troy Memorial Highway.
Oh my goodness.
Right?
That would be a Lord Dex move probably, but we'll see.
We'll see. Okay. Yep. Sorry.
We are here for the clue. We understand you have it.
I cannot help you. Only Janal can.
Didn't he die hundreds of years ago?
Janal joined with our symbiont so that it could carry his secrets across the ages until a worthy seeker arrived.
So when they beam in and they meet with the Guardians, and meet Kalsara, who embodies Janal's 800-year-old symbiont.
And I found that fascinating. I liked her. She seemed like an elder, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And she says, listen, he's ready to transfer his consciousness. You know, I've been hanging on to this guy for a long time. Let's get him into somebody else. She's also very willing, and everybody's very willing to do this. And I'm curious about how Discovery was vetted based on one question that they're willing to do all this. And I'm wondering, is there more to come?
Yeah, good point. And so they state the fact that they're going to have to transfer the consciousness. This is a temporary thing. And yeah. Dr. Colbert volunteers to take on Janal's consciousness.
What was his excuse?
It was something to the effect of,
I do this for a living.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a sensitive, caring soul.
Oh, it had to do with the fact that it was a lot of emotion. And it was going to be a heavyweight.
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
This is what I do. I'm a doctor. Yeah, and, you know, and the ship's counselor, basically.
He can handle it.
So
he has kind of moved over to ship counselor, too, at the same time.
Yeah, well, a doctor is also a counselor. When you're stressing out too much, we need to take you off duty. You know, I mean, doctors have always generally played the counselor role. Because they have to listen to you to make assessments.
On Star Trek, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It requires that you speak with him directly.
How are we supposed to do this?
A Jantara.
It's a ritual that allows Janal's consciousness to transfer to another body for a limited time.
Captain, Janal can use me.
So Janal speaks through Dr. Colbert, and right after this ritual happens, and right off the bat, this dude is like, you know, he seems to be enjoying this young body. He's into it. And he's got a really cool swagger.
Yeah. And if you follow Wilson Cruz like I do on Instagram, all he does is post like shirtless, you know, pictures. I did pecs today. I did abs today. The guy's ridiculous. And so I in a good way. And so it's very funny when he's like, wow, this guy really works out. That's like a meta joke there.
Oh, yeah. But this is like his alter ego. I mean, this is like the actor's alter ego that he's getting a chance to play out. And he actually played it different than he plays the doctor.
The transference is complete.
What year is it?
3191. It's good to meet you, Janal. I'm Captain Burnham of the USS Discovery.
I love what they've done with the uniform. A little formal, though.
That's what I liked. I've only seen Wilson Cruz. I didn't know him before Discovery, and I've only seen him in this one character. And I really loved what he did with the character. He's just like, yeah, man. It's just like this dude, and I thought he did a great job. I really thought he was somebody else.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And so that led me to not trusting him because he was too cocky and too cavalier.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, when you're 800 years old, or however old he is, and my sense was he was also going to betray them somehow, but I couldn't figure out how. The thing I liked about this episode is that even though Star Trek can be formulaic or, you know, not many surprises, this one had me guessing a lot. It really did.
Yeah, I just didn't know what this, Janal's motivations, you know, were.
Yeah.
You know, what are you going to put these two through? It was definitely open-ended, and I did appreciate that.
And last point, again, why so easy? Why is it happening so easy for them? That was on my mind.
Yeah. So, I mean, yellow alert, basically. Not red alert, okay. I meant yellow alert, because I don't know where this is going to go. And so we jump to, I've always like to condense down sub-stories. So we have this thing with Saru and Tarina, and they're talking about their engagement announcement, and they're discussing it.
I'm ready with your briefing for today's session.
Thank you, Mr. Dubin. This is, of course, Captain Saru. I don't believe you two have met.
It is a pleasure.
Our announcement is prepared with one small edit. Once I have made that, you may transmit to the appropriate outlets.
And so she's the president of Navarre, and, you know, she has, you know, these duties. And, you know, Navarre is made up of Vulcans, Romulans who actually have emotions, and then you have, like, the Vulcans who are actually, like, traditionalists. And so that comes with a lot of expectations, I would assume. And so her assistant and her right hand challenges Saru when the two of them are together and says that, you know, Tarina's marriage to Saru could complicate things for her. And he thinks it's in their best interest not to, you know, get married.
And I like this guy. He's the Iago, you know, to her Othello. And he's just getting in Saru's ear like, you know, he's meddling. But he's doing it because he's, for lack of a better term, a patriot. And he's true to her. And he wants to see that she is not compromised in any way, because it is such a fine line for her to walk. And of course, Saru, you know, buys it, and he's like, yeah, you're probably right. And he just has to think about it. And it's sad, because I think Saru is such a good person, and he's only had an incredible record, and he's such a good guy, and all these things. He's very sensitive too.
Yeah, and the thing about it is that story is very relatable. You're talking about species, but we go through these things in, you know, in our own lives with, interracial and cultural unions that complicate things. Yeah. And you have people who are against it and the politics of it. And so this is something that's very relatable, you know, that's going on between the two of them.
You know, even in good aspects, like my wife is Mexican. I'm married to a woman who's part of a huge Mexican family. And even that has its interesting challenges for us, just with me, with their family and, you know, how we're perceived and all that stuff. It's not bad. It's not terrible. It's not a lot, but it's there. It's, you know, it's part of it. Even when we enjoy each other's cultures and stuff like that, it's always top of mind, or at least in the background somewhere.
Yeah. And like you, you know, my wife is half black, half white, and her parents are from two vastly different cultures, Australian and South Pacific Islander. Yeah. And then come over here to America, and their cultural differences there. And so, you know, the good thing is our families are totally fine, but there are definitely some cultural drop-offs here and there on how things are perceived and how things are taken, received rather.
Yeah.
And
well, I think we got a hint of that at your wedding too. There was just so many cultures there.
Oh yeah, it was beautiful. Which I loved. I just was so happy. It was everything that I ever dreamed of having this international wedding. It was great.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, so we'll see how that plays out between Saru and Tarina. You know, will she buckle under the pressure or not? But she did get insulted when Saru brought it up, and it was like, I was like, oh, she didn't like that.
But not for why you think. Well, I would have thought when he said, he eventually says, listen, maybe we postpone. And she says no. And the thing I love about her character, and she's always been kind of a subtle character, and I think this is her episode to shine, was she didn't get upset that he was backing out. She got upset that he didn't recognize that she's got this. She can handle this. The bigger things have not felled her before. She understands the stakes. She understands what's in front of her, what her mission is, what her responsibilities are. She's not going to let anything get in the way of that. She's not going to blow it. And I love that she stood up for herself. But she got angry with him, and she said something great to him, which I think he learned, which was, I can be angry with you and still choose you and love you.
Yeah, yeah. And I think what's really cool is over all the years, you know, 30, my whole entire life of watching Star Trek, the really good actors who play Vulcans really nail it to the point now that you can, you know, when a Vulcan is upset or fearful, and to the average person, they wouldn't even pick it up, because that's the beauty of Vulcans is they contain their emotions, but it's how they say things and the way they emote is their emotion.
Yeah. You know who I thought played a brilliant Vulcan was Jolene Blaylock on Enterprise?
Yes.
I wasn't a huge fan of the show, and I didn't love that they just put her in skimpy stuff and didn't trust her to be a good actress. But I thought she nailed her character. She had incredible emotions all behind her face, searing in there that she refused to show because she was a Vulcan. But you could see it in her eyes and her and the way she held herself. And I loved watching her act because I thought she was a brilliant Vulcan.
Which was basically what happened when Seven and Nine came on. And I think that she, you know, that was played brilliantly.
Lieutenant Tilly.
Oh, Captain Burnham asked me to show you around the ship to facilitate introductions.
She gave me a chaperone. Introductions can wait. I'm combing through sensor data for any signs of Malamok's ship. That is the top priority from an operational perspective.
So we get to Tilly and Rayner. So Tilly shows up and she's basically going to escort him through the ship to interview everyone. And he's just not having it.
Right. And we get to see her comedic side again, which I like, her awkward comedic side. And she's like, okay, I'm here to take you to meet the crew. And he's like, no, they can come see me. And she's like, sir, you were asked to go meet the crew. And he's like, no, I was asked to meet with the crew. I don't have to go anywhere. I'm tracking Maul and Locke. You bring them here 5 minutes each. And there's your Captain Shaw for you. There's your no at the dinner table. He definitely is.
Oh, yeah. I was just tripping on it because all I could think of was the movie Step Brothers. Shut your mouth. Shut your mouth. You remember they doing the interview in the tuxedos?
No, I didn't see the movie. I'm so sorry.
Oh, my gosh. You've got to watch that film.
Guys.
It is hilarious.
A little Will Ferrell goes a long way for me. I will watch it eventually.
No, you'll like it because it's that stupid. It's so stupid it's good.
Okay.
But I was just tripping on Rayner. Rayner is not even, he's not even breaking stride. He's just basically shutting her down. Okay, yeah, bring him in here. 5 minutes.
And she, you know, she has to go for it because she's a commander and he's, you know, I guess not sub-commander, but what is he? If you have two commanders, she's a commander or what is she?
Remember, everyone was made, when they came into the future, they were all made commanders.
Yeah, but they have different hierarchies, so it doesn't make sense to me. Like, second commander, first commander. No, well, he's the number one.
Yeah, I think it's understood that he, you know, with being the second in command of the entire ship, that makes...
He's number one, yeah.
He's number one, so his orders, you know, supersedes hers. But we go through a series of him interviewing people, and it's just like, bam, 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 bam,
it's great.
Bam. He asks
very, very bullet-pointed questions, right? Like, you grew up here. What was your biggest challenge? I can't remember what the questions are now, but they answered. And there's your montage too, where they're trying to give answers. And one guy's like, "So my brother and I," he's like, "You're done." I love that.
Shut your mouth. You make
it. See, now I have to see it. Yeah. Okay. Now I got to see it.
Solve the poem and the riddle. Very impressive, making it this far. And now you're here for the clue.
Yes. You have it.
No. But I can take you to it.
So we get back to the expedition, and Burnham is full of questions for Janal. He's just, like, really lackadaisical about it. He's like, don't be too concerned. He didn't seem concerned. He's just hanging out.
And plus, I'm not buying that he's taking them anywhere. I'm starting to think, like, first of all, is this really the guy? And if it is, it's like, has he been released from the bottle and he's the genie that just wants to go out and get drunk and like, I will deal with it later. And because we've seen stories like that. Or is he just so in love with being a person again that he just wants to enjoy himself? Or is he one of those wise people that makes you work for it? And I'm still not sure which one it is.
Yeah. So my trust of him has, grown exponentially at this point because I just don't know what this dude's going to do. Is he going to pull off his head and... pull off his mask, and it was like, I got you. You know, I don't know. Scooby-Doo moment. I have no clue.
I would have gotten away with it, too. Well, I think you wrote, too, you were concerned that, you know, is he going to want to stay in Culber's body, which I hadn't considered.
800 years ago, Federation president brought together 6 scientists in secret. Don't ask me their names. I won't tell you. I will tell you that our mission was to research the progenitors and their message.
The one Captain Picard found.
Yes.
But he does give up some info. He starts talking about how 800 years ago, back then, and this is the story we know from the Picard episode, rather the Next Generation episode, the Federation president brought together six scientists in secret. This is where Picard picked up the story when his old teacher, the trail went cold, and I think he was killed. And he then tells them the full story of how the scientists made this pact to destroy their research and hide the location of what they had found, because they keep saying this every episode, they don't want it to get into the wrong hands.
And rightfully so.
Yeah, because you not only do you have, I'm surprised there's not more people on the trail. I mean, Mal and Locke seem pretty lame for people who are onto a hell of a discovery, but maybe there'll be something behind them too.
Yeah, but I like this whole thing. You know, he further explains why they hid the clues.
Why didn't you give it to the Federation for safekeeping?
The Dominion War was raging. Everyone saw an enemy in everyone else, and we knew that technology could be used for great destruction.
You know, you're talking about great power here that has the ability to destroy, but they said they hid it because at the time, you know, the Federation was going through the Dominion War, and you don't know who's who.
Right, and that's not something that the Discovery crew knew of. They went into the future. They had no idea of the Dominion War until they got to the other side, you know. They mostly were learning about the burn and all these other things that happened. They had to relearn all of that stuff.
Exactly. But I what was really cool is I've always liked the nobility of pure scientists, you know, the ones that weren't doing anything for evil. They were really, they had these concerns. They wanted to, they went through and discovered things throughout history, but then they also wondered, you know, will our discoveries destroy at the same time? And there was always thought behind, what are we doing? Should we, you know, release this power, this discovery, you know, to the masses? It could be a bad thing, like the person who just discovered dynamite and,
or splitting the atom, or the Jurassic Park question. You're so worried about if you could, you didn't worry about it if you should.
Yeah, there you go. You know, that's the thing. So this has played out throughout human history, and I really took to what Janal was saying.
Then later on, as they're talking, Burnham's still trying to figure out why Janal just doesn't disclose the location of the tech.
We created the clues so that no one could reach the end unless they followed the full path. We wanted the power to be found, but only by a worthy seeker. And only when the time was right, a time of peace, when species have evolved enough to use it only for good.
I find it interesting, too, that they're talking to a guy that they've known, Dr. Culber, but it's not him. That must be weird. That's like me talking to you, but you're inhabiting somebody else, or someone else is inhabiting you. And he's just like, listen, you got to be worthy. And I'm thinking, okay, all right, now he's putting them through some kind of test. And then, of course, cue the alien monster. All right, so they're attacked by these projectile-throwing creatures. Book, of course, gets injured. Someone has to get injured. And they have to, you know, hide behind a rock just for safety. And Janal / Culber just kind of walks away.
Yeah, I was tripping. I was like, and he's gone. All right. You guys handle it. You got this.
And now it's this monster thing. And now I'm thinking he just led them there to kill them, because it's not a test. It's you don't, you know, try to find out our secrets kind of thing.
The Pretenders technology is several billion years old. It could have incredible applications.
And so back on Discovery, Commander Stamets is doing his little 5-minute with Captain Rayner, and he's really excited about the possibilities of what this tech could bring.
Yeah, and I think he actually gets Rayner's attention for 5 seconds. He's like, oh, that's interesting. Okay, bye.
Bye. Yeah. But I think the bigger point is that the more they talk about the potential of what this can do, the more scared I get. Because if you have something that has the ability to create, it most likely has the ability to destroy.
And he mentions something really scares me, is maybe you can reanimate the dead.
Yep.
Like, okay, what? So are they going to bring back Picard? Remember, they saved his body after Picard. I'm just saying. Okay, moving on.
And Kirk and Picard.
And Kirk
was in it. Yep.
Sure. And why not Jonathan Archer? And we don't know how Archer dies.
Yep. That play, you know, that's that opens a Pandora's box of
issues.
Can of
worms.
Yep.
Have you lost your mind?
Our phasers made us seem like a threat. Try to communicate with them again. Now, tell them we're sorry and that we are leaving.
What ends up happening is Burnham and Book, you know, have to fall back, and they end up speaking to the animal because Book has this ability to speak to creatures and basically apologizes, and the creatures leave.
Which, again, I get because he has that ability. It was a good trick to get them out of trouble. Maybe I was okay with it. It felt, again, just a little deus ex machina, like, oh, I can talk to animals. Hey, listen to me. Calm down. It's the, again, he's Aquaman. He's talking to the fish.
Dude, that was 70s Aquaman.
Totally, yeah. Aquaman rides a whale to get to the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah.
I can't
meanwhile,
do that.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
so they calm down and they realize that they're just protecting their kiddos.
And so they're like,
let's go find Janal and kick his ass.
Janal, I've missed this. The simple pleasure of gazing at the stars. I see you survived.
Skin of our teeth.
You knew that was their nesting ground, didn't you? And you had us draw our phasers to incite them. Why?
And that's great. He's loving life. You know, he's back in a body. This is good. And he admits the whole thing was just a test, which is one of the guesses that we had, to see what they would do when they encountered another life form. Would they kill it? You know, would they try to connect? And of course they can. Thank God the guy can read minds with animals. Right?
Meanwhile, inside the creature's mind.
Meanwhile, throwing projectiles at Burnham.
Yeah, Family Guy spoofed that. They were talking about Meg on a date. It was like the time when she dated the Super Friends voiceover guy.
Oh my God.
The two of them are sitting in a car at Outlook Point, and he goes, meanwhile, beneath Meg Griffin's blouse.
Oh my God, dude. I have to see that. I'm going to YouTube that as soon as we're done with this.
Oh yeah, there's a clip of it. That was funny.
Yeah, oh my God. I love the Hall of Justice guy. Janal says yes. You know what? You've shown yourselves to be worthy. Again, I still feel that's kind of a weird, like they really get it really easy, even though they're up against the animals, but they get out of it easy. They pass. And it turns out the original shape that they were looking at had nothing to do with it. That Janal just had the extra piece, the second piece, basically in another location. And he just hands it to them. Here you go.
Good job. Yep.
Hey, good job. Yep.
There you go.
Trina, I've given it much thought and have come to realize that what I was trying to do was not what you asked for. I apologize.
I accept. The matter is already in the past.
We do go back to Saru and Trina, and Saru apologizes to her for the way that he approached it. And like you said before, you know, she was well aware of what she's doing. You know, I know what I'm doing. I'm not doing this naively.
I like that. And she's teaching him how to be in a relationship. I'm not convinced he has been, or if he has, you know, he comes from a race that was prey. And he's had to learn how to be someone who is valid and, you know, in a world where he's not being chased to be eaten or enslaved.
Yeah, 100%. And, Tarina made a really good point. She said, you know, keeping their engagement a secret or their relationship a secret would do more damage and completely undermine her position more than any ill will towards their relationship if she, you know, by going public.
I like that. She's eminently wise. She's got a tremendous amount of responsibility, and she still has it within her to look at Saru and say, let's get married. I love you. I don't know if she said I love you, but I mean, you know, she's choosing this guy. She's not backing down, and she's not getting rid of him. I love how she has to completely crane her neck to look up to him. Like, she's half his size. I find that adorable.
Yeah, the dude's tall in real life.
Shantara has ended. Janal has left you.
Janal feels deep gratitude for the extra moments of life you have given him.
The experience was Well, I don't have the words.
So, back on the planet, Janal returns his consciousness back
and he's like,
to
thanks.
Dr. Culver. Yeah.
And that was great.
I'm just like waiting for it.
What?
What was that?
You're waiting for what?
Oh, let me start that one over. So,
oh, sure.
So Janal returns Culber's consciousness back, or returns his body under his control. And I'm just sitting here waiting for it. I'm waiting to, you know, for the punchline that really Culber's consciousness went back to the other, went to the other host or some crazy crap like that.
Is that what happened? I thought it was just normal.
Well, the thing was, the actual symbiote didn't move over. They have this ability to be able to transfer their consciousness temporarily.
Yes, yeah,
so
yeah,
I
yeah,
was
yeah.
just wondering, did Culber somehow transfer Culber's consciousness?
Got you.
And he stayed in Culber's body. That was my
assumption. Oh, the switcheroo, the Freaky Friday.
Still there.
Yeah.
Yeah, Freaky Friday. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I assumed that that was the case.
I felt like everything was so easy at that point, and we're nearing the end of the show, that didn't even occur to me, because they really got everything easy in this episode. I know they only have 10 to tell the whole story. So that didn't occur to me, because that would have to be a cliffhanger, because they're near the end of the episode.
Yeah, well, that's what I was expecting. At the end of the episode, they're sitting there talking in the kitchen, and he slips up and says something. It's like, oh my God, you're still Janal.
That would be cool. Oh my God, that would be great. Or maybe we find that out later. Maybe he's pretending. Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see.
Ooh,
maybe
that's a
he's
good
there
twist.
To guide. That
yes.
would be the great plot twist, that it was him all along.
Dude, you know, that would be
making
amazing.
Making sure that they were pure.
Yes. Oh, my God. I love it. Let's do that.
I know.
Let's
call them. We should be writers for the show.
No, for those who can't write, podcast. Hello.
There you go. Boom. You've relegated us to podcasters.
I did.
I realize we did not get off on the best foot today, Lieutenant, but leadership and friendship are two different beasts. Professional distance keeps the distinction clear.
We get back to the ship, and Rayner uncharacteristically apologizes to Tilly for how things got started. And it's mainly because she put him in his place and told him to go screw. And he explains himself. He's like, where I come from, there's a line between leadership and friendship, and that's why I'm keeping my distance from the crew. And she's like, that's not the way it works here. That's not our culture. We have to show each other that we care. And it is true. You know, Discovery is the feel-good heart ship.
Yeah, and considering all they've been through, it would be that way.
Yes, they've left everything they know to go 800 years into the future. They can never go back. All they have is each other. It's been crazy. They get to the future. Yes, of course.
I get that school of leadership. I've seen it. I've been under it. I mean, I just always tend to be the other way. I'm the more, hey, everybody, let's be cool. But I embody the intensity that Rayner has. Because when it's time for business now, you know, I don't play favorites or anything like that. I'm like, let's get to it.
Yeah, and you know, that may show up at some point. Again, I go back to Shaw. I see him as a Shaw character. But the thing about Shaw I didn't like was that he was really tough, but he never really, his bark was not as tough as his bite. It would be interesting to see if Rayner's the same way.
Yeah, we'll see. We still have 7 more episodes to see his character growth.
There's 12?
As we did with Shaw.
How many episodes are there?
Oh,
there's 10. I keep thinking we're on episode 5. I'm going to cut that. Yeah, you're absolutely right. 7 more.
Yep, and, you know, so, you know, it's you know, we have time. We still have time. You know, 10 episodes is about right for, you know, fully fleshing out characters and seeing some growth and twists and turns. So we'll see how that goes.
And at the end of the episode, when it's like, okay, that was a good episode and we really moved the story along, a wonderful twist at the last second. Everybody's saying goodbye and they're all shaking each other's hands in this very interesting way. And a bug is planted on it. I'm going to pick that up. A bug is planted on Adira's arm. And as we look at see who did that, turns out it's Maul in a red hoodie.
Yep, she's been there. She's been there
the whole
time.
They did get there before. So how did they get there? Who gave them permission? How was she able to sneak in? Maybe this is why.
Yeah, because the Guardians aren't doing a good job.
No, because they ask one question: what's 5 + 5? 10. You're in. I mean, the whole thing was so easy to get down there. Maybe it was a setup, like, you know, let them find it, let them get it, let them do this. You know, maybe Maul was. Who knows? I don't know.
Well, they didn't get the second clue.
Right. So what were they doing there?
I mean, they had parts of, remember, because they destroyed the writing and everything, but they didn't have the relic. They read some things that led them there.
And they were supposed to be headed to Beta Zed.
Yeah. So clearly they figured out that they needed to go to Trill, but they didn't have what they needed to get past the Guardian. So I guess they figured a way to get down there and blend in. But the Guardians aren't doing a good job. I wouldn't know if, you know, there was somebody in the midst that's not part of the family.
Well, and we didn't really cover the story of Adira and her boyfriend, but he's going to go full Trill, and they're splitting up. And I think that's good in a way. I want them to have rich characters, not characters that are just there to be there because they have to be there. And I like their interaction this time, and I think they had more weight and gravitas. I think the writers got a clue this year.
Yeah, I think so. I think there was way more weight to their character and their development because Adira is growing. She's, you know, trying to understand life as a singular person, not with a consciousness that was, you know, with her.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. So yeah. Cool. So very, very interesting. So, you know, I'm still in. I'm really enjoying this mission. I'm looking forward to going to Beta Zed. I'm like wanting the next piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, I think I'm glad that they're doing this. I'm all in. I'm definitely, this is my favorite season. I mean, I loved season one and until Lorca was not Lorca and then they killed him somehow. But yeah, I'm in, and I think that they could really do something special with this.
Well, that concludes this episode of the Star Trek Discovery edition of Energize.
We love that you're listening. Thanks for joining along with us. We're excited to share this last season of Discovery with you. You can check us out on our website, www.energizepodcasts.com. It's anthonymclemore.com if you want to check out Anthony, and stevetruitt.com. If you want to check out my stuff, I've got a new book, the second book in my series, The Mindset Chronicles, called The Spill, dropping May 21st. You can get more information on my website.
Thanks for listening. I'm Anthony McLemore.
I'm Steve Truitt. Live long and prosper.